So you're listening to Paradigm Shifters. This is Veronica Entwistle, and my guest today is Michael Murphy, also known as Dr. Radiokinesis, because Michael in Tucson, Arizona, does some pretty amazing healing work. You probably do it in other places as well. So let's find out who Michael Murphy is and how you get to use radiokinesis. So welcome to the show, Michael.
Hi, and thank you guys for having me.
Oh, we're really glad to talk to you. I've heard wonderful things about you. Are you going to live up to that or what?
We will try.
Yeah. So tell us about it, what it is. Like, what your title, and I know that's a Skype name, but is that also what you're called? And when I hear radiokinesis, I think of radionics, and I think of kinesiology. And tell us what your specialty is. What is it that you do?
Well, before I got into the kinesiology, I used to work at a repair shop of electronics and designing software and coding, all that. And when I got involved in the kinesiology, it taught me something very valuable, that the body and the mind are all just sending radio waves and frequencies all out to people, and we could tap into those. And so I put the radio, as in the waves of the body going through signals and going outward to the people, to put it together with kinesis, which is the study of muscle movement.
Okay, so how the muscles move and how it intersects with the nerves, is that it?
Right. So if you took like a muscle and you said to the patient to resist, and she would resist you, and you push down and say, "My name is Larry," and her arm goes weak, when she says, "My name is Larry," it implies that she lied against her own core, mm-hmm. in causing the body to go weak under that stressor. So just the word or the lie that somebody was told or been informed of, they can start believing. So we use kinesiology to remove those codes.
I like that a lot. I just want to do a little funny side thing, which at least I think it's funny, is you were in technology, and if you're working with computers and so on, you're actually working with the brain, right? You're working with an electronic brain. And to me, I see quite a parallel there, or quite a training ground for you to be working with the intelligence of our radio flows or our energy flows in our body. Is that how you would see it as well?
Yeah, exactly. Basically, when a person goes through life, they receive an input and an output. And when they receive an out or input into the system, it starts to create bad code. And so the way you're looking at it is, I used to design software and stuff, and you have to really understand where it's going to go and what's the highest potential it can reach. But the brain never needs upgrades. They're constantly upgrading themselves. So it's just pretty interesting.
The brain is constantly upgrading itself?
Yeah, and automatically. It adapts to a situation like an abusive one and learns how to deal with that. Sometimes a person goes to grief or death, and so it upgrades to learn how to deal with a feeling that never was coded into our bodies to begin with.
What are you telling me also? I mean, you're not saying this, but I'm kind of leaping forward that we can learn how to create bigger adaptations with our own brain with some of the work that you do?
Right. It's just basically removing the bad and putting the good back in. This lady, she has polio, and she's had polio for like 60 years or something, and I asked her to take her brace off, and she said, "Well, there's no muscle there." I said, "I know, but I'd like to see it." So she lays it down. I said, "Now tell your brain to move your toes." And she did, and nothing happened. And I could see the electricity was trying to get there. It just blocked in like four different locations. So I just did a neural block on her to block the brain's function to communicate with the leg on that area, reset it, held some points, and we started teaching her how to move her leg. This one's going to do this one. This one's going to do this one. By the time I was done, she was able to move her leg. So 60 years from polio, and the other day she's moving her leg. And it's not like she's going to go running, because when you're building atrophied muscles, you're going to need to, you know, do them very gently. But any movement, even if she thinks about it, is already building up the muscle tissue.
Hmm. So you were able to enter her subjective... what I mean is, people have to be able to accept you with their minds and their emotion too, eh?
Right. You'd have to do that. And a neural block is like kind of blocking out. We do it to ourselves. You can neurally block yourself in a bad relationship, saying, "I'm never going to call that person again."
Right.
And they make that promise, and they actually believe the promise, so it goes forever. They never talk to them again.
Right.
The weak person calls them up, that has codependency issues, call them, "Oh, call me back, please," you know. So it's that relationship. My whole point of everything is that the relationship is everything. The relationship to you and water, the relationship to how your body processes chemicals and emotions and feelings. You see what I'm saying?
You think we're inheriting all that?
We're just communicating. So if you break it down to everybody's thoughts were able to be caught by another person, mm-hmm. imagine how fast the world would be repaired.
Hmm.
Because a person with a sign that says, I got no home and I need money and I just, you know, need a little help, people give them some money and they're drug addicts. And then there's the people that are really homeless, but you can't distinguish this difference. Mm-hmm. If you could hear the other person's feelings and their thoughts, how effective would we be able to narrow that down?
Hmm, that's interesting. Hey, talk about mental health for a minute. Like, is that just in your style of work? Is mental health just when the function of the brain is, I mean, can you talk about that somehow? I don't quite even know how to ask this question, but I'm fascinated by mental health.
Well, I am too. I've been watching the news and there's been a lot of shootings around the world.
Exactly.
And what I find interesting about that whole thing is everybody wants to blame the tool that was used, not the effect of what caused the tool to be used.
Mm-hmm.
And in a child's brain, they're depressed, they're sad, maybe they're getting bullied at school, their parents put them on medication because they were told by the doctor this is the only way this kid can learn to function, mm-hmm. is to drug him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as long as he stays drugged, he can never upgrade his software to say, I can deal with more. He doesn't get that chance because it's all blocked, so he's going to learn whatever he can trying to stay high like that and then move forward. I don't think that's going to work for anybody.
So when you talk about, for example, guns, I guess my simple way of thinking it is we feed people with broken foods. We make our life really stressful and everybody's going way too fast. And we're all kind of angry and people aren't really processing their feelings. And then they get a gun.
Exactly. And that's the mental illness you were talking about. They're struggling with their thoughts. And they don't have anybody that can hear them. So if someone like me was to stand in the presence of someone like him, I would start talking to him because I could tell that he needed to be talked to, or maybe even just needed a hug. Mm-hmm. I mean, those things are out there. It's just that nobody's going to go out of their way to help another person for free or out of the kindness of their heart. You know what I mean?
Well, I think we're also scared to.
Yeah, because what are you signing up for?
Yeah, exactly. Or because you really don't know what's ticking inside of people who are inexplicable, right? You don't know whether it's dangerous or not, right?
Right.
So I was looking through a lot of your material that you put up, you sent to me, and there are ways of testing whether or not you can work on a person. So what do you do to test it, to go into it? You have a system, don't you, of asking permission?
Yeah, you'd ask body permission, energetic permission, meaning could I work on you, and is it okay if I work on you or you work with me? And the body says yes. If it says no, if it says yes, we always ask a follow-up question, is there any reason not to? And that would stay yes, like if you need to add an oil, tell her relax, go to the bathroom, different things like that before you start the session. You really can't hide too many secrets in the session because with this type of kinesiology, it's way more advanced than applied kinesiology, and it has the ability to allow us to get 100% accuracy to our questions as long as you're asking it correctly.
So what kind of questions are they, and how can I ask them correctly?
So I'll do a wrong question. Can I have ice cream? The body would say yes.
Okay.
But what if the person's allergic to it? The
right.
word, can I have ice cream, is a yes.
Okay.
The second follow-up is, can I beat myself in the head with a 2x4? The body would say yes, because you use the word can.
Right.
You say, should I have ice cream? The body would go, no. Should I beat myself in the head with a 2x4? No. So there's sometimes where you go and you take like a needle and you put it in the acupressure point. Well, what if the body wanted to up one acupressure point up higher than the acupuncturist was in?
Right.
He gets lucky. All it does is slow the process down. But if you put it in the right acupressure point in the same meridian, it would speed it up.
Okay, but the body won't reject it when it's slightly out of whack, would it?
Now, it would do it. Like, let's say you went, not to be funny, but I've done this. You go into a practitioner's home or whatever, and then they got candles and crystal balls going, and you lay down and you're kind of nervous, and maybe it's against your belief system or something, and you're sitting in the room and she starts smoking a bong or something and sets it down and is about to work on you, and she really isn't making any sense, right. The body automatically would deny permission, and it would also scan her to see what her potential harm to you is and lets you know, and you'd lose permission. Mm. Now, if the lady didn't ask for permission and kept working on you, you'd get what they call a healing reaction, right? When you leave, you're sick, you don't feel good.
Mm-hmm.
Those are like the typical healing reactions from not having permission to work on people.
And that's the body rejecting the whole thing in a way, isn't it?
Yep, and it can happen. And sometimes what I'll do, I'll sit and just talk with a person for a little bit and share my stories or their stories. And then we get going, and it makes it so we can start working.
So, you know, we talked about the brain, and you were saying that people get, for example, in grief, people are in a state of really deep defense, right? Self-protection, self-support, right? And I'm going, do you think that our organs have their own, like, independently, do our organs all have their own reactions to things as well? Like, some organ will be in defense and some organ isn't?
Right, yep. I believe that all organs have an emotion to them, and they also have a little bit of a, if you start, like, look at the gallbladder, it's the gallbladder gets sick from constantly worrying. So anybody that has gallbladder, like dark rings under their eye, having problems with it, you go up and say, you have gallbladder? And they're like, yeah, how'd you know? You know, you're going to have it out? They're like, yeah, it's already pre-scheduled. Well, how much do you worry? Every day. So there's a correlation between the organs and the emotions of what trauma hurts the organ because of its job.
So what do you do with that? Do you tap? Or do you? One more thing, too. You've already talked about the defense thing, and I'm going, you're also really kind. You said sometimes you sit there and you share stories and so on. That's a really good route, isn't it, to release people's self-defense, self-protection?
Yeah, if you go into a doctor nowadays and you walk in, he's going to look at you once and then go to his pad of paper. And when he's done, he's going to hand you about 4 or 5 prescriptions. You walk out, you're confused. Did I get better? Did I not? So in my work, I sit with somebody and I teach them the levels of where they're going to go. Mm-hmm. What is their goal? What's their wish list? If they put together 10 things to look at, what can we fix? You know, if I want to get rid of my headaches, I don't want to be slow anymore. I want to be able to speed up. I want to be able to focus. We can add all those into the list and start working on them directly using the body to recode those functions or retune the frequency of what it is that you're hearing.
Oh, okay. Well, what's the most exciting stuff that you work on, or is it all?
I think that Alzheimer's has probably been one of my highest ranking results.
Oh, good. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but I have other people that will hire me to wake their mother or their father up because of the fact that they're fighting so much over the money. So, like my last case that they brought me in, it was a couple of years ago, and she came in, and normally they would wake up right during the session.
You mean somebody who has Alzheimer's, you're trying to wake them up?
Yeah, they're asleep. The way they describe it is they just say they were asleep. They can hear everything you're saying, but in order for them to answer your question, it's like 4 days later they finally answer it, and nobody's responding to that. So in this case, she didn't wake up, but I used kinesiology to read what was going on with her. Like, who threw the apple? And then they all pointed at his brother and said he broke some kind of like table thing. Your mom says you can have that. And I'm divvying up all her stuff because she wanted to be able to communicate. Well, once I removed the chemicals off of her body and her neural block shut down, she woke up and started crying and telling all her kids, I can't believe that you're fighting over this stuff. And it was just real emotional to see them all do that. And after that, they totally were just a tight-knit family because they got to have that disclosure. With normally you would just say, bye, mom, and that's the end of it because they're not functioning, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so they would not have expected her to hear any of what was going on, eh?
Right, and they were hearing it.
So tell me then, this is Alzheimer's, which is supposed to deteriorate the entire brain, and you're saying that you can help intercept those blocks in the normal, electronic flow or radio waves or whatever we were calling them, right? You can actually help with that, right?
Well, when you ever gone out to your car and you have a battery post that's all covered in that, like,
Oh, yeah.
Stuff, and you got to clean it off because it makes a bad connection.
All that white fuzzy stuff.
Right. So in Alzheimer's, the brain synapses and electrodes and everything are all covered in some type of plaque that are causing the communication to slow down. Even though the communication is taking 100% of effect, the communication is being very slowed down.
That's really interesting. So why, let's just talk for a minute about, and this might, you might leave this in the hypothetical aspect, I don't know, but why do we get Alzheimer's? What do you think is the root? Is it an emotional thing? Is it emotional and toxicity?
Well, it's pretty much all of the above. We drink out of aluminum cans. We use aluminum under our armpits, which are causing all kinds of problems to the mind in general. One thing I do want to point out that I thought was cute, an old lady came and she says, I have a question for you, just like you just asked me the question about Alzheimer's. She said, why do we have osteoporosis? I said, well, because then I start telling her the technical term. And she says, look at this. If a person dies and they're in a coffin, and they can be in a coffin for 50,000 years and their bones are in the perfect shape it was when they died, why are we dying when we're alive but not when we're dead?
Ah, very good. Hey?
Yeah, so I said, well, you're drinking soft drinks, they have phosphoric acid, they eat bones, you're, you know, and she goes, but I quit all that stuff, you see? So the damage of that kind of stuff is pretty insane. So.
And do you think the damage of that stuff is a trigger that then continues even though you stop drinking soda or whatever?
Yeah, I think there's a programming damage in the self stuff, so.
I heard from somebody, some interviewee that with the advent of pharmaceuticals was the beginning of osteoporosis.
I would agree with that too, yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of interesting, isn't it? So let's go back into the organs, and I have a reason for asking you this, mostly because it's one of my obsessions is to learn about this part, and I know your work is amazing. But so I was talking to a young woman the other day who has no pituitary. She's an amazing woman. She wasn't supposed to live a long time. She's in her mid-40s, doing really well. But she has a lot of hormone life-supporting stuff that she has to do because she's no pituitary. But they're doing some work on her, and they have to take blood for tests. And she's gotten so her – and she's really, really sensitive. And she's gotten so her veins disappear, and they cannot find them. And I just jumped into – how about I don't say anything. You say what you would have assumed about that or would have interpreted by that.
You know, when your veins start collapsing like that, it's because they've been damaged. And not only have they been damaged, but they need a lot more blood flow. And it sounds like she's not producing enough blood flow in her body at all. I would have to see like a photo of her. But when you can see a photo of somebody and see all the different angles to what the problem is, even though they're saying, hey, I have no pituitary, but this is what's going on. It could be thyroid. It could have been a lot of different things that were damaged during the birthing process, because was she born without it or had it removed?
No, she had cancer at 10, and they had a tumor taken out, and they took the pituitary as well.
It's pretty interesting because you come into this life, and it's like 10 years old already starting a problem like that. You don't have to work at it. And then she must have done massive amounts of work to still be alive at this day.
Oh, my goodness. She studies nutrition. She does. She's brilliant. She's very intuitive. She's very, very smart. And she works on herself just like you would recommend or I would recommend, right?
Right.
But my response was kind of cute. I went, your little body's really been attacked a lot. Your veins and arteries are going, forget it. I'm not coming anywhere near you guys.
Exactly.
But then I said to her, maybe you should, and it's not about me, but I'm just sort of teasing her. And I said, maybe you should start talking to them and saying, come on, because I know that your manner is really amazing with people, and when you can talk to people, you can bring them out and get them to relax their holding patterns, right?
Quite a bit.
And I'm wondering about that, the gallbladder we were talking about, or the Alzheimer brain, talking to them, to the actual organ, is that helpful for people?
Yeah, it is, especially if you can identify why it's having a problem. If you said, oh, poor gallbladder, it's going to be okay. I'm not worried about money or losing my home or any of that stuff. I'm fine. You know, you're not worrying, you know, and you kind of comfort the gallbladder not to take the worry so much. That's a very serious thing to the body when it can hear you communicate with it.
I like that a lot. So our listeners could do that with themselves to a degree, couldn't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. So mental health is a really big thing for you, eh? And so what about heart? Let's talk about heart. And here's the other thing, is we already talked about nutrition and pharmaceuticals in a kind of a thumbnail kind of sketch. But do you think that we have the capacity to work with the brain and the energy transmissions enough to bypass some of the toxicity in this time?
Yeah, I think that when I work on people who use a lot of chemicals, a lot of toxins, mm-hmm. to actually make them immune to it.
Really?
The higher the immunity to it, the more you're not susceptible to it. So let's say a person is allergic to coconut. Mm-hmm. They're so allergic to it, if they even touch it, they'll swell up. A person would come into my office, and I would take some coconut, and it'd be in like 4 or 5 Ziploc bags. I'd set it on a CV6, which is the acupressure point below your belly button. Mm-hmm. You hold all the end points, or you needle them if you're an acupuncturist. You would needle them in order, and you leave the coconut on their belly. And when they're done, you tell them 2 weeks, they can eat all they want, and they can eat whatever they want, and they just do it.
Wow.
So you're dealing with allergy components too. I mean, it's psychological, environmental allergies, you know, just different chemical problems. Like my latest call to fame was this heroin addict. She had died 3 times. And
overdoses, you mean?
Yeah, and three different times of her life, but she keeps going back to it. And so when she came and saw me, I asked her if she was ready to quit. And she said, yeah. And I go, I want you to say a sentence for me. I don't do drugs. And I made her say it 10 times. And then I said, by the way, I have some heroin. Would you like some? She goes, I don't do drugs.
Oh.
And she's been sober 7 months now. CPS called me, and so did some other people that were involved with it. And they said, what is our treatment plan for her? And I just laughed because I was like, what do you mean? What treatment plan? It's been 7 months. I said on the phone, hey, so-and-so, do you want some heroin? And she goes, I don't do drugs. And they all laughed and they thought it was funny, but she believes that she doesn't do drugs now.
So that's a very, very exciting story. You got to know that, eh?
Yeah, it's my best one I'm having fun with lately. She just has changed. She's studying my work. She's becoming a kinesiologist. She's getting her life back on target. And everybody that just sees her is just like, wow, this is crazy. You're doing amazing.
She's getting a bigger light all the time, isn't she?
Yeah, exactly.
So have you worked with a lot of addictions that way? Is that
Same thing. They don't go through detox, which is nice. Mm-hmm. When you do a set correction on heroin, it makes you immune to it for a short period of time so you don't, your cell systems aren't calling for it.
So you don't actually have to go through the detox process?
No, not with this way. Jimmy Scott, Dr. Jimmy Scott, he's the one in Canada mm-hmm. that wrote this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And he seems to got it figured out. It works great with the way he does it. So,
really?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if it's because he's Canadian. I'm Canadian too, Michael.
Yeah, I heard that in the voice here in the house. It's a yeah. So.
And it's funny because, and jumping back to grief, you said it can be taken care of in a couple of sessions, and I immediately dropped into what about all the long-term effects? And you're saying, like about addictions, you don't really have to go through all that stuff. You just have to switch the connections, right? So it's not a connection anymore. Is that right?
Right. Let's talk about, while you're on that topic, let's talk about if I was to thump somebody in the head in the right spot really hard and give them amnesia,
right.
And they have no memory of any of the pain they've ever been through. They would say, I don't smoke, do I? And you're like, no, you don't smoke. They go, oh, okay, I don't smoke, I don't drink. And you create this whole person out of this person that's been horribly treated and raised bad and horrible, tormented. You gave them a break because now they have no memory of that. Wouldn't that be the fastest fix for everybody on the planet?
Oh, wouldn't it be? Wouldn't it be?
You wouldn't be thinking about my mom's death or my dad or my brother or, oh, the accident or, oh, you don't have any experiential feelings. So later in life, you can fix all that. You see what I'm saying?
So then let's go back to aging. Would this not help prolong a person's life in a healthy way?
Yeah, well, the thing is I think most people step in their own healing path to make themselves sick, and it takes a long time to get that undone first. Once you get that, then you move forward, and then it starts changing. I know one guy, I think he's 87 now, and I saw him a couple months ago, And I hadn't seen him in like 6-7 years. He looks the same as he did the day I left. And it's just so ironic that he takes care of himself every day. You know, he brushes his teeth with clay. He reads about parasites. He's always doing cleanses and just keeping himself healthy. You know, he wants to hang on.
Oh, wow. So back to the Alzheimer's person, when you've brought them out of a sleep, right?
Uh-huh.
Can they remain Alzheimer free?
Well, that's a good question, because the first person I did, she was Spanish, and all she could say was that sound was the only thing she could say. Those were her words. So once she got that back, I haven't checked in with him in a long time, but the last client that I got hired that I was telling you the story about with the family was there was fighting over the things.
That's a good story.
She passed away 9 days later.
Oh.
So you can imagine being in an old folks home, not knowing who you are for 2 years, being able to get your message sent to your kids, and then passing on without having to worry anymore.
Oh, my gosh.
So that was quite impressive to me. I was like, she's been hanging on to tell them that.
And actually, it's really interesting because I don't think of dying as the worst thing. I think there's a lot of worse things than dying, isn't there?
Yeah, well, it's being in an old folks home.
Exactly, being in a warehousing situation.
Exactly.
What about little kids? Have you worked on little kids?
Yeah, I work on a lot of autism cases, a lot of kids that are having problems with that. I work on a lot of neuromuscular disease like cerebral palsy, just helping them realign their muscles and get the tendons tightened up, a lot of physiotherapy stuff. And our office now has like 6 massage therapists, so I'm always passing people back and forth through their hands as well.
Are you also a massage therapist?
No, a lot of people ask me for massages, and I can do them, but I do muscle alignments. Mm-hmm. And when I try to help people with the other things we, you know, we do in our work or whatever, they go through their experience. You know what I mean?
Well, so what is, we haven't asked you, Michael, about who you are. Who are you?
Oh, I'm that. I'm that one thing. I was telling some friends of mine before that I play piano, and how it worked is I sat down at 8 years old and I just could play. I don't know why. I can't play by ear and I can't play by note. I can compose on the spot. And one day I'll send you some CD of that.
I'd love that.
But I believe everybody's a genius. Everybody on the planet. You just have got to touch the right thing at the right moment when you're willing to learn. And you'll be able to do that. So a lot of people call
Wait a minute. You said willing to learn. Was that a part of you, Michael Murphy, as a kid, just wanting to go do the piano now? Like that?
Yeah, I just got – well, it was delivered, and no one was playing it, and I didn't know why it was there. So I went and sat down, and it started playing, and my mom had thought somebody broke into the house because it was quite well.
And you were 8?
Around 8 years old, yeah. So as I started climbing and learning different instruments, guitar, you know, whatever I could get my hands on, and just learning. And so basically I just never spent a moment sitting down doing nothing. I would always be doing something to benefit my knowledge of where I was going.
And were you folks really encouraging about some of your explorations, or, you know?
Not so much when I tore apart the TV and tried to get free cable, but I mean, we've got that fixed.
So did you study, what did you study when you came out of school? Did you go to college? Did you study like physical therapy or body-mind things? Did you?
When I got out of school, I said, this is the time of my life to learn. And because around 17, I was designing software, I got sick from the computer radiation. Oh. And so I went to a lot of doctors and wasn't getting fixed. So I went and saw the kinesiologist and they fixed me. And then 4 days later, I was a billion times better. And then 4 months later, after lots of treatments, I was like, yay, I got my life back. So I started studying this right away around 17. And then Dr. Jimmy Scott has a private training course where he sends out a teacher and you do the course and then you take level 1, level 2, level 3, and therefore on up. And that's how I pulled off getting involved in this stuff.
Where is Jimmy Scott? In Canada?
He's in Canada, but I think he's in Toronto.
And do you have to, does the person have to go to him or does he do...
No, he sends sends teachers. Like one of the bigger Canadian teachers up there is Sandra Gus. She's up in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. She's got quite a bit of following for her classes because she's a very good hands-on teacher.
And do you do classes? Do you give classes?
I do classes in radiokinesis, but usually I'll have my students take about 5 levels of health kinesiology. So I don't have to teach all the basics of like, what does the magnet do and how to use that and how to do an unpinch and a spindle and how to, you know, all these random words they have to learn, you know?
Well, I wanted to ask you also about the magnet. Do you want to tell people about the magnet? So you actually have used that trajectory, studied through that, and then developed your own, is that what you're saying?
Right, yeah, I just took all the key components of what was good, and I created a tube called an energy mover. And
okay.
And basically it's built off of the frequencies of radio waves. And radio waves are kicked out of from everybody around the planet. We have antennas that can pick them up. You know how like they're saying ghost or EMP waves, and they go down and they're like, you know, EMF waves, I guess, is what they're looking at for that. But different ways of reading those signals, you know, you've got to have a device for it. Well, in kinesiology, I found that we could just communicate directly to the mind, bypass all the stuff, and get right to the source.
So talk about this energy mover.
Energy movers are very complex because they're based off of the principle of how a TV receives a signal. If a TV is receiving one long wave that has 2 channels in it, 14 and 13, and it can't distinguish the difference, they'll lay on top of each other. And back in the old days, you'd see like a movie behind the screen going on.
Right.
You ever seen that?
Kind of, yeah.
That's the wave being distorted.
So the wave
pattern is not exact. So imagine that your brain is telling you to wiggle your toe, but your foot wiggles instead of your toe. It's because the signal is incorrect. The communication signal itself is wrong. So the energy movers would take that signal, re-spin it into the perfect frequency, thus feeding the rest of the body.
So it's kind of like a director of the way the waves are working at the time. It's a collector-director kind of thing?
Yeah, it's like a transducer. It just transduces the technology into a readable frequency.
And it looks like a tube?
Yeah, it's like a little glass tube. I might have them online, actually, if you want to see one.
Can anybody use them, or do you have to be trained? Do you have to do 5 levels of kinesiology, health kinesiology, and then a bunch of radiokinesis?
Yeah, you definitely would need some training in them. They're not just like simple to use. You know what I mean?
And you invented it,
right?
Wow, you're smart for a boy, huh?
Yeah, we put it together somehow.
Now, I want to go back to the autism thing. You are able, or you have had good experiences helping kids extricate themselves from that particular pattern. It's kind of related to Alzheimer's, or is it related to DNA, or what is it?
Well, Alzheimer's is kind of interesting because I did have a little boy case recently, and the mom was asking me what she thought of it, or how could I deal with it? What would I be able to do with him? And I just said, give me a second with him. And I walked around the room and talked his language with him. And 5 minutes later, he's chasing me. And then 6 minutes later, he's jumping in my arms and I'm hanging him upside down. And his parents can't believe that he's actually touching anybody because that's his problem. But all you have to do is talk their language.
And that was autism, right?
Yeah, Asperger's, yep.
Asperger's, yeah. And so what does that mean, talk the language? Because some of them, we don't know how. Like, we don't know what.
They speak in numbers, like repetitive number patterns, like 1, 2, 3. You know, if you're tapping your pen, do like that, 3, 4 times, 5. And right. they start maybe tapping 2 with you. I just hit 3 notes on the piano. He hit 3 notes. I ran, knocked on the window, ran over, grabbed the ball, rolled it out, went back to the piano, hit the 3 notes, and just did a circle in the home. And her parents were just like, wow, I can't believe you're doing this. And he opened up and was able to communicate with me, and not verbally, but hang on to me and hug me and, you know, do things that you wouldn't be able to get anybody to do.
So then did you continue to work with him, and did he evolve and change, or what?
Well, actually, I moved out of the state before I even got a chance to really work with him, but the parents got the help they needed. They went and actually saw autism specialists that diagnosed him with it because they didn't know what was wrong with him.
Mm. But you know what's really intriguing, Michael, is we keep going back into a similar thing, which is a lot of it is about literally communicating with whatever the situation is, isn't it?
Yeah, with everything. I mean, if you get pulled over by a police officer and your reaction is anger and intense, and he sees that, he gets angry and he gets intense. But if you just say, here's my driver's license, registration, what was I doing? You know, be kind to them, they'll be kind to you, and then you have communication. Bad communication is almost deadly, you know what I mean? So we create that horrible feeling. So
what about fertility?
Fertility.
I wondered if you know why, because I'm really not obsessed, but I'm really thinking a lot about the environmental problems we're having these days, and I'm thinking that fertility, the lack of fertility, is a hard thing for people these days, and I think it's environmental, frankly.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lady that came in my office. I can only think back of what I've done before in my database. I'm glad I can remember some of them. She came in and she was a pharmacy lady. She made drugs and she wanted a baby. And so they did the in vitro. They did all the different things. They'd done it all and none of it held. She came and saw me from a recommendation from somebody else. She came and saw me and I said, you're to have sex tonight at 2:35 and you need to have it done within 6 minutes exactly. And she thought I was kidding. But I asked her body, when can she conceive? And it was at that one moment in time that she would be able to do it. So they went home, they had sex, and then the next session she was pregnant.
Oh, so my gosh.
Once you know the time zone of what the body's looking to conceive, it really helps, because they had never had intimacy at that time because he's a doctor and she's the lab, and so they have different hours, so they never really get to spend time with each other.
Well, isn't it also true that there could have been another kind of, I mean, you might have also established a flow where there wasn't, besides the communication thing?
Yeah, it's a possibility that was true too.
And you learned a lot of that through muscle testing. I wanted to ask you about the magnets and a little bit more about kinesiology, and some of the material you sent me has some intricate little tests.
Right. The magnets are super important because magnets spin clockwise and counterclockwise of your blood cells, because the iron that's in your blood, it gets magnetized so it starts to spin. And if a cell is spinning counterclockwise, it's healthy. And if it spins clockwise, it's actually unhealthy.
Oh, okay.
So
what kind of a magnet? Where do you get that kind of a magnet?
Well, you get them at Home Depot, but they need to be marked south-seeking, north-seeking. Use a compass and just paint whatever side is north and then whatever side is south. One of the problems that the Nikons had right off the bat is they didn't have a polarity to their magnet, so you couldn't tell if it was the strong or the weak. It was just both sides are, you know, non-polarity.
I think I heard that actually, yeah.
Yeah.
And so you use that as a primary, is that a beginning kind of test? If I come to see you for the first time, do you use that?
The magnet?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I always use it to test for balance, to make sure your meridians are into balance. But after that, we use them for neural blocks or pain relief or regrowing bone. When you broke your bone, we'll wrap it in magnets. And it heals it faster.
That's really interesting. So... let me see. What about, I guess what I'd like you to do is teach people something that they can use. Because I keep going into this thing about aging. Somewhere deep down, we all think that we could undo that whole aging process, don't we? I mean, a lot of us feel like we could.
Yeah, I would imagine that we could slow it down pretty much aggressively.
But so give us a hint. Give us a hint.
Well, like obviously food is a part of the process and people can't let go of certain things, sugars, things like that. But if you think back to how you ate as a teenager, could you eat like that now?
Oh, no.
No, can't drink 20 beers and you can't eat all the candy and you can't eat all the... So now as you get older, you're
onion
like,
rings.
Yeah, when you get older, you cut all that out of your diet and you're like, okay, I got to have this, this, this. So a lot of the fun is kind of cut out as well.
Do you think that makes a big difference with aging, fun?
Well, play and fun, just we do a test on somebody to find out how much play they do, how much work, how much rest, and how much sleep they do, and exercise. We give them a percentage of what it is, but you find it interesting that single moms get like two minutes of self-play, and they don't get anything for their body to take care of themselves.
And so fun is some way to break through neural blocks. Is that what you'd say?
Yeah, it's like, go out and have fun with people when you normally just would stay at home.
So it's a little bit like communicating with an aspect of yourself, isn't it? It's like a little bit like really relaxing and being aware of an aspect of yourself that really needs something, huh?
Yeah, and if you set it up to actually talk to the inner child and say, look, I'm not going to hurt you anymore, and I won't do these things that are making you feel so bad, then you make that promise and you stick to it.
What do you think of yoga?
I like it. I think it's good. I tried it a little while ago.
Oh, you did? What about Qigong? What about Chinese stuff?
Qigong I found to be very interesting. I had a client that used to do it all the time. She was never out of balance from the day that I met her to the day that I hadn't seen her. It was like 2-3 years I worked with her, and she never was out of balance. Every day she would do Qigong. So I think it's a very powerful method.
And do you have any MS stories? Now, we're almost done here, but I want to make sure that we've done everything we can do.
You mean like yanking people out of cars?
No, out of MS, muscular sclerosis.
Oh, I thought you said EMS. I was like emergency.
Oh, no. That might be an interesting one, too.
Yeah.
Do you do emergency work? You probably can't do everything, Michael. Well, only one person.
Well, I used to, but I don't anymore because I'm not licensed in the state. But if you go and we take a look at some of the – there's some kind of noise coming in there. Okay, that's fixed. So if you – what was the question?
We just went into the emergency thing. Do you work with people on an emergency level?
Well, I used to when I first got started, and then I realized that I couldn't tell anything wrong with them, and it was like being blocked intuitively. And
okay.
I didn't like it. I didn't like that system of having to not intuitively know what is wrong with a person. So I went away from that field and got into the kinesiology full time. But okay. You said working with MS patients. I love MS patients because sometimes beryllium poisoning, it mimics MS, and you'll get a lot of people that have had beryllium poisoning, people that have worked in mines or even people that have made their husbands mad and the husband's trying to poison them. But I've seen those cases where, you know, you see it and you're like, this is an MS because MS is a bilateral disease.
So you can tell which is MS and which is a poisoning, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Right, exactly. Because one is more like a stroke and one is more like a nerve disorder.
So, wow.
Yeah.
And then let's end it with that. And what about Fallon's behavior stuff?
Yeah, I worked with a lot of kids. There was a boy I worked with once. He was kind of funny. He came in, he had chains and gang stuff. He was 12 years old. And I asked him what he wanted to do in life, and he said he wanted to be an Air Force pilot. And I said, oh, that's too bad. And he goes, why do you say that? I said, well, don't you die before you even make it? He goes, yeah, I die when I'm 17. I said, well, what happens? He's got, I got shot right here, and he points in his chest, and he goes, gang member shot me. I go, oh, okay. So when you head into this gang member type thing and you have these issues, are you going to be able to stand up to yourself? He said, no. So he come back the next week. The chains were off. The gear was off, and he was just this little 12-year-old boy asking me, when do I die? Am I going to make it to – I go, well, you get to 26. What happens? And then he tells me his story. He gets drunk and – gets hit by a car, and he tells his whole story. And in his head, it's real to him, so I allowed him to recreate a new future without the gang and the stuff that he was having a problem without telling him.
Well, when he came up with what was going to happen and how he was going to die, was that just his creation? Or
that was his creation via my question, like, what do you want to do and what blocks it? Why do you not make it? And so he creates that story because he knows his behavior right now is not appropriate. And if I would ask him, do you think your behavior is appropriate? He'd say, go and jump off a bridge or something. He wouldn't care. But the way I did it, he realized it himself instead of me telling him how bad his life would be, you know?
Mm-hmm. Wow. So, Michael, this has just been so intriguing. And tell people how to get hold of more information about you, how to connect with you and enjoy you.
Yeah, they can call my office line at 517-331-7203. And you can also contact me at radiokinesis@gmail.com. And that's radiokinesis@gmail, and you can contact me if you have questions from there. And I just love being on Veronica's show. It's very, very nicely done with the interview. I appreciate that.
Thank you so much. And I know you're in Tucson, Arizona, but if you ever come out here, love to meet you.
I would love to come out to LA.
All right. Well, we'll talk about that again. All right.
All right. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for the time, Michael. It's just been very, very intriguing.
You too. We'll see you.
All right. Bye-bye.